courage. I learned it from my adoptive mom.
Hold my hand?
You hold my hand!
Learn about adopting a teen from foster care at AdoptUSKids.org. You can't imagine the reward. Brought to you by AdoptUS Kids, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and the Ad Council.
This is your tech news briefing for Tuesday, May 25th. I'm Chris Zinsley for The Wall Street Journal, filling in for Amanda Llewellyn. Ransomware attacks have grown a lot more common. The recent Colonial Pipeline hack is just the biggest recent example. In that case, the company decided to pay the hackers ransom. Now, paying the people who locked your systems is always a controversial decision. But enough companies are willing to do it that there are now people out there who specialize in negotiating with hackers on behalf of the victims. So, how do you go about that, negotiating with a hacker? We'll find out after these headlines. We report exclusively that Amazon is nearing a deal to buy the Hollywood studio MGM for almost $9 billion, including debt. People familiar with the matter say an agreement could be announced as early as this week. MGM's library includes classics like the James Bond franchise, Rocky, and The Pink Panther, as well as hit shows like Hulu's The Handmaid's Tale and FX's Fargo. Those shows could help drive subscribers to Amazon's Prime streaming service. If the deal goes through, it would be the second biggest acquisition in Amazon's history after its purchase of Whole Foods in 2017. And yesterday, a judge heard closing arguments in the antitrust court battle between Apple and Epic Games, the maker of Fortnite. Epic accuses Apple of unfairly restricting competition in its App Store and forcing developers to use its in-app payment system, in which Apple takes a 30% cut of sales. Apple says it's not a monopoly and that app developers have other options. A ruling is expected in the coming months. Our tech reporter Sarah Needleman says the judge's eventual verdict might not fully side with either company.
She may not go all in on one side or the other, but she may, for example, require Apple to lower its commissions, but might not force Apple to open up the iPhone to third-party app distributors. Another issue that's come up during the trial is quote-unquote steering, and that's where right now Apple doesn't allow developers to tell consumers that they might be able to get a better deal on a digital purchase by going outside of the App Store. And so the judge has indicated that she might be open to allowing, making it so that developers could put in some language or link that says, hey, you could potentially get a better deal by going to your PC to sign up for our service. So she could do something that's a little bit mixed.
All right, coming up, ransomware negotiators. That's a real thing. We talk to one after the break.
Remember back in January when a group of Redditors drove up the price of GameStop?
It was discombobulating. It was disturbing. Like, what the hell is going on?
I'm Annie Minoff, and I also wanted to know what was going on. Since then, I've talked to dozens of people and learned the full story of how a Reddit forum fueled a massive stock surge. One that took Wall Street totally by surprise.
I should have known. Yes, I should have. But I did not.
Follow our five-part series on The Journal, Sundays starting May 30th, wherever you get your podcasts.
You might have heard about the ransomware attack targeting Colonial Pipeline this month. It forced a six-day-long shutdown of the biggest conduit for fuel on the East Coast. To get back up and running, the company agreed to pay the hackers a $4.4 million ransom. The CEO of Colonial told the Wall Street Journal that he made the call to do it because executives weren't sure how bad the attack was or how long it would take to fix. Paying ransom to get past this kind of attack is controversial, to say the least. There are lots of concerns about the kind of precedent it sets. But despite the worries, a cottage industry of ransomware negotiators has emerged, who act as brokers between the hackers and their victims. We'll hear from one of them in just a moment. But first, our cybersecurity reporter David Uberti is here to set the scene. Dave, thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me.
So, Dave, how long has this sort of thing been going on? Is this idea of a ransomware negotiator new?
Well, ransomware has been around for several years, but it's really exploded over the last year or two, affecting large organizations such as Colonial, small mom-and-pop companies as well. And as a result of that, we've seen sort of a cottage industry, as you said, emerge of these folks who either specialize in talking directly with hackers, in some cases trying and succeeding in negotiating ransom demands down. And then you also have additional firms who specialize in what we call incident response in cybersecurity. So essentially, they're the first responders who come in when you get hacked. They try to deduce what exactly happened to your systems and figure out if you can get back online without actually paying the ransom. You know, those two groups of people in concert with executives at companies, they have to make a decision, and this is sort of like the weird dynamics at play here, of whether the hackers who actually broke into computer networks are trustworthy and will actually do what they say in response for some of the money that they're asking for.
Yeah, and on that note, I want to turn now to our other guest. Curtis Minder is the co-founder of the cyber reconnaissance startup GroupSense. His company's been involved in these kind of ransomware negotiations since last year. Curtis, thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks a lot for having me.
So, Curtis, I want to find out from you what these sorts of negotiations are actually like. You've got the hacker making demands on one side, and you've got the company that you're working for that's been hacked on the other, and you're in the middle.
Yeah, it's a bit of a, it's like a therapy session in two directions sometimes. But we, to your point, the victim, let's start with the victim. It varies from victim to victim. We have done negotiations on behalf of very small companies, like to the size of a print shop or a florist. Most of our negotiations are on the higher end, so for large enterprises. And you can imagine the types of people who are involved from the victim side in those two scenarios are very different. So in a florist, there's no IT person. There's just the business owner who has been hurt by this. It's actually very emotional. If you get on the phone with these folks, you'll hear it in their voice. Where a large enterprise, also very emotional, but there's 20 so people involved, and there's a bit of a committee around the response. So very different experience on the victim side. Also varies a lot on the threat actor side. There's kind of two kinds of threat actors. There's the sort of organized, what we call ransomware gangs. You may have seen that phrase in some of the media. And then there's the individual threat actors that are sort of lone operators, that sort of thing. And the experience is very different. The organized groups are just that. They're very organized, and they are largely template-based in how they deal with you. And I think the best way to put it is it does come across as a bit of a normal business transaction if you treat it properly, and not as aggressive as you would imagine. If it goes poorly, it can get aggressive, but in most cases, it's like a business transaction.
So when you go into one of these negotiations, what are the most important things that you are keeping in mind?
Well, we start with, talking with the victim, pretty detailed discussion with the victim about the business scenario that's in play, right? So what is the impact of the business? How long can you afford to be offline? What kind of impact does it have to your business if the ransomware actors leak this data? Does it, are they leaking your client data? Is that going to put you out of business also? Because that changes how quickly we move and how those sorts of things. So the first thing is understanding the landscape and the impact to the victim business. The second part is understanding the threat actor, again, flipping sides, understanding the group that we're operating with, having done this for well over a year now, and many of these a week, we have repeat customers, if you will, on the threat actor side, where we kind of know how they operate. We know the MO. So we'll take that information, that intelligence, if you will, back to the victim and say, look, this is Conti. That's the name of a ransomware group. Look, this is Conti. It's going to take about this many days, and they're going to settle for this percentage of the total price, typically. And we can give them a range. So a lot of times we can go into these discussions with a rough idea of how they're going to turn out before they even start.
I find it so fascinating how, despite the nature of these kinds of attacks, that it's the sort of thing that when you go into the negotiations, it's like a business deal.
Yeah, it very much is. The threat actors are effectively operating a business. And some of the anecdotes that I could share with you are from our perspective that are really interesting. And maybe the audience doesn't appreciate not being from this world is when you do engage with these folks and you're negotiating, for example, if you're dealing with one of the ransomware gangs, they have a very organized process. You know that the first person you talk to is not the decision maker. And at some point, you're going to get to a point where they are no longer authorized to negotiate with you. And then they literally will say, I'm going to go get my manager. And so you mentioned the business transaction, but it is on their side also very much a business transaction. I think the key thing is when we're dealing with the victim side of this is to coach them on the do's and do nots and what we will and won't do and why. And part of that is like, you know, you just want to negotiate in good faith, right? And even though these are bad guys, you don't need to tell them they're bad guys, right? They know that. They've already done their bad thing. We're trying to unwind that. And so let's move forward. And moving forward includes negotiating in good faith, which means you really shouldn't lie to them. Keep in mind, they may have your finances. So don't try to tell them how much cash you have. They know they have that, right? So you need to negotiate in good faith and as if it is a standard business transaction.
All right, Curtis, thank you so much for coming on the show to talk about this.
Thanks for having me, Chris.
So, Dave, I want to move on from what Curtis was just talking about, from the negotiations to what happens afterward. We should say that even if one of these ransom deals is reached, that doesn't necessarily mean that everything immediately goes back to normal for the company, right?
Yeah, I think that's the key thing at play here as well. You know, interestingly, a lot of these ransomware groups, and we've seen this with DarkSide, the company that is thought to have targeted Colonial Pipeline, they really care about their brand and sort of how that looks to companies they target and these negotiators, because that could determine whether these victims end up paying. As my colleague Colin Eaton reported a couple of days ago in the journal, the decryptor that DarkSide actually produced for Colonial after they paid $4.4 million in Bitcoin did not unlock Colonial's data to the extent the company wanted. So in some cases, you do have some of these groups that are unable to do what they say they can do for the price that they put on your data. And that's really bad for their brand. You know, down the line, subsequently in attacks, you know, other companies or other negotiators could look at a group like DarkSide and say, hey, the situation that they had with Colonial was not good. And that's a reason for us, on top of all the other reasons, to not pay them.
I find it amazing that hacker groups worry about their brand image.
And, you know, on the other end of this, with negotiators and companies who do incident response, I mean, they conduct some extreme market research as well when it comes to these hacking groups.
So ultimately, where does the cybersecurity community come down on this issue and working with someone to help negotiate a settlement? Is there any sort of consensus as to whether that's a good thing, a bad thing? Does it depend?
I mean, you've hit on like one of the most contentious issues in the cybersecurity world of whether you should pay the ransom. And, you know, to raise that up one sort of order of magnitude, whether this should be outlawed in some way. There are some interesting arguments and persuasive arguments that by paying ransom, companies are essentially creating a market for this sort of criminal activity. You know, Colonial Pipeline coming out and saying we paid $4.4 million. You know, that could be read as, you know, putting a sign on their back saying you could try this again and we might end up paying you again to do this. On the other hand, I think there is a lot of nuance to each one of these individual situations. And if we're, you know, trying to think about sort of the overall impact of a ransomware attack on a company like Colonial or a very small business, oftentimes not paying the ransom could lead to even greater damage for that company. And if you're talking about a small or medium-sized business, you know, in some cases, if they don't have a lot of know-how with cybersecurity in terms of how to rebuild their systems or recover lost data or responding to extortion attempts, I mean, some of those impacts could be fatal for them. So I think there is a lot of sort of disagreement and nuance about how this plays out. And it's really bust into the open over the last couple of weeks.
All right. That's our cybersecurity reporter, David Uberti. Dave, thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks so much for having me.
And that's it for today's tech news briefing. You can find more tech stories on our website, wsj.com. And if you like our show, please go rate and review us in your app store. It really does help. I'm Chris Zinsley for The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.